Good evening and welcome back to another edition of Football Extra Points on RF Sports Radio. Thanks for joining me tonight. I'm your host, Scott King, creator of footballextrapoints.com, part of the Yard Barker Network. On tonight's show, we're going to be continuing our discussions on the offseason. I've got a couple of great guests coming on this evening to discuss the Steelers and the draft, so we'll be talking to those guys tonight. Also, we're always open to your calls. If you want to call in, the number is 323-927-2906. And you can join the conversation, give us your thoughts on the offseason so far, free agency, and the upcoming draft for the NFL. So we are exactly 1 month away from the draft. I know we've been anxiously waiting for it. Those of us that don't have teams in the playoffs or the Super Bowl, we've been kind of looking forward to this, and coverage is all over the TV for the free agency. Now that things are kind of slowing down, focus will move more towards the draft. A couple of more moves this week in free agency. We had Ed Reed sign with the Texans, so he decided to move on from the Ravens. You know, he's still a solid player, still has a little bit left in the tank, so Texans trying to win the Super Bowl now, so maybe Ed Reed moves from one team that's going to that won the Super Bowl to another team who has aspirations to win it, so good for him. Elvis Dumervilleafter the whole debacle in Denver with his agent not filing his paperwork and becoming a free agent, he landed in Baltimore, which is a huge land for the Ravens. Great play for him. Great place for him to land. The Ravens defense was old anyways. They lost some players with Lewis and Reed. So this gives them a great player in Elvis DumervilleI think he's a great rusher and is going to give them somebody that can put pressure on the quarterback. So I think that's a great spot for him to land. Works out for him. He gets to move on, I guess, to another team. He could have gone back to Denver if he wanted to, but really lands with Baltimore. I think that's really going to work out well for the Ravens. Another big name that's been in the news is Brian Urlacher. He had kind of a public falling out with the Bears, trying to negotiate a contract. They gave him an ultimatum, and he decided to walk away from it. And you've got to look at this from a kind of independent perspective. Brian Urlacher was a great player. He was one of the best in the league, the best in the league at his position, did an outstanding job, high-level defensive player of the year, multiple Pro Bowls. But at this point in his career, he's gotten dinged up recently. He's older. He's slower. And the Bears weren't going to invest a lot of money in it and give him a kind of a thank you contract at the end of his career. And as much as it's hard to hear, this is a business. And I don't blame the Bears for doing what they did. I don't blame Urlacher for doing what he did. He wanted more money, thought he was due it. The Bears weren't going to pay him. So they move on. You know, people who say, well, they owed it to him to give him a contract, or he owed it to them to stay. You know, these players play out their contract, or they get to a point where they've either outplayed their contract and they want to leave, or they've underperformed on the contract and they get cut. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's all about business. And that's not anything that either side in this deal has done anything wrong in my mind. It's just part of the business, and it's just what happens. There are some other kind of notable names out there. You've got Dwight Freeney out there looking for a new team after leaving the Colts. You've got Nnamdi Asamoah, who a couple years ago was thought to be one of the best corners in the league. He's on the street. Darius Haywood-Bey, who's a bigger name than anything in OC Umanura. What you get at this point in free agency after the big flurry at the beginning, you get these guys that are up there in age who have lost the step. Maybe some guys that have had some injury issues, some guys with some performance issues, question marks around what they can do on the field, like Haywood-Bey. So these guys will trickle into some spots over the next several weeks. Some teams may hold off and see what they do in the draft. So these guys may sit around and take a while before they land somewhere. it's also a possibility that they want to wait and see. Maybe Brian Urlacher is going to wait and see what teams get in the draft and go around and handpick the spots that he wants. So, you know, at this point in the free agency pool, the big names have moved. Now you've got these guys with these question marks, and we'll see where they land. So it looks like we've got Neil on the line, and we can go ahead and dive into the Steelers off-season program. Hi, Neil. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. Neil is the editor for the Steel Curtain blog.
Behind the Steel Curtain,
Sports...
yeah.
Behind the Steel, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
Go ahead. Behind the Steel Curtain there on the blog. So you cover the Steelers year-round, and, I was on your guys' site, and everybody's talking about the draft, obviously, and off-season programs. So kind of the big headline Steeler for the, Steelers this off-season was Mike Wallace and him moving on. What were your thoughts of him moving on, and, will he be missed in the offense next season?
Well, I don't think he'd be missed in the offense next season. I mean, he was missed in the offense this season. So I think Mike Wallace pretty much sealed his fate in, Pittsburgh when he turned down a contract that was offered to him last year before the, training camp had started. They allegedly had offered him a, five-year, $50 million contract that wasn't all that big of an upfront payment, as I understand it, that was a, risk he was willing to take to play the year on his restricted tag and see what he could get. And obviously, it worked out pretty well for him. He you know, hit a, pretty big bonanza in Miami, and it, it's simply when a wide receiver hits the free agency market, the original team doesn't have a chance. One point, he's 26 years old when he's put up the big play numbers that Wallace has. So I'm pretty sure that the team had been figuring him out of their plans for the 2013 season anyway. I mean, they used him as best they could, but it's time to, you know, kind of dial down the, big play, well, the hope of the big play offense that the Steelers have had the last couple of years, because simply their quarterback couldn't take it. I mean, Roethlisberger has been hit more often than, any other quarterback. I think that stat goes. It's time to, come back to a more ball control offense and, to really get back to, you know, a run-first mentality. That's a big part of the reason why they've drafted as many offensive linemen as highly as they have in the draft. And, you know, I'm one of the few Steelers fans in general that, don't really hold any kind of bitterness toward Mike Wallace. You know, he went out and got what he wanted to get, and, you know, good for him. He's able to do that, and that's fine. I don't think the Steelers need him to win. I don't think he was instrumental on any championship team that they had. So, you know, Wallace is a good player. He's going to make plays in Miami, and, you know, hopefully it's a, playoff matchup Steelers fans can watch down the line.
Yeah, and, you hit on one of the, areas that I notice of a concern from the Steelers is that offensive line, and, you're exactly right. It's great to have a guy that can stretch the field, but if you can't give the quarterback enough time to, get the ball to him, it doesn't do you any good. And that seems to be a, weakness there.
Yeah, I mean, a big part of the issue was, you know, their desire to, run deep plays, but it's not as if Mike Wallace is running nothing but, you know, nine routes when he's out there. A lot of it is the hits that Roethlisberger takes is, just as much on him as it is the offensive line. I mean, I'm not saying that this is, you know, that the Hogs back in the Redskins day, you know, level of talent or anything, but when you have a quarterback that wants to be as improvisational as, Roethlisberger is, and he's said it multiple times before, that there's something, you know, in his mind, manly and tough about sitting in the pocket and, shrugging off, you know, a Terrell Suggs charging at him and still making the play down the field. You know, in a lot of ways, I think Roethlisberger waited for the pressure to come so he could react to it and then make a play. I mean, he took as much punishment with plays like that that he did, you know, anything that was designed. If you watch him in Todd Haley's offense before he was injured against Kansas City in, Week 10, the shorter philosophy was really working. He was one of the best quarterbacks in football statistically. You know, team might not have been winning quite as much, but things were really clicking for Pittsburgh in the, middle of last season. They just couldn't hang on to it after Roethlisberger had been injured, and it's understandable why. I mean, he's the, you know, the franchise player. In that time, you know, Mike Wallace may have made a play or two, but the bulk of that team was succeeding simply because they were able to run the ball. They could set up play action, And Roethlisberger was very effective. I mean, his third down numbers were absolutely ridiculous by about midseason. I mean, he was a legitimate, you know, top three MVP candidate. So it's an offense that can work with what they have. The offensive line is very talented. They're arguably one of the most athletic groups in the league. So what they really need to do is just kind of, you know, protect Ben from himself more than anything else. And to do that, you got to run the ball. You can't pay Mike Wallace, you know, $13 million a year or whatever he's getting to make a play or two a game. You really have to balance out your team, and that's what they're doing.
Yeah, and Pittsburgh, you know, wants to be or historically has been known for running the ball. They've moved on from Rashard Mendenhall, who's had some injuries. Do you see Dwyer as the guy that can carry the load for the Steelers, or a combination of him and Redmond, or do they need to go out in this draft and grab somebody in that second round?
I think it's a little bit of both. You know, I'll say this. I don't think we know who the third running back is yet. I think the Steelers are going to look for a real pure zone runner in this draft. I think they're really going to focus on finding a guy that can come in and get, you know, probably maybe, you know, a few more carries than Dwyer and Redmond will be able to do. I don't think any one of them is going to, you know, really outrush the others. But the younger rookie, the guy that they're going to want to go with in the future, it's somebody like a Monty Ball, somebody like I forget his name off the top of my head, that kid from Michigan State. Players like that have great vision, that run with great balance, they're not going to blow you away with their combine statistics, but they know how to run within a restrained offense, which is what they're going to do. They're going to be doing a lot of zone, really inside and outside zone, a lot of stretch running. And to really succeed in that, it's not so much a speed thing as it is a vision thing. You need to be able to see where the cutback is, and you need to be able to get upfield and accelerate. And for me anyway, and Steelers fans are happy, I'm not in charge of the draft, but I look at a guy like Monty Ball. If he's around, you know, in the third round, I have no problem taking him because, one, I don't think he's any less athletic than Jonathan Dwyer or Isaac Redmond are. And two, he has much better vision. You can see it when he runs. I mean, he ran like crazy at Wisconsin, who's, you know, probably the best zone running team in college football. That's a guy who knows how to do it. And if you put him behind an offensive line that has Maurkice Pouncey and David DeCastro in one direction or another, you're going to be able to pick up some yards. Those guys are extremely quick for their size. They're very good blockers. They're very strong. They're going to open up holes and get things on the inside or the outside. And you get a guy like that, he can literally just go for 4.5 yards all the way down the field. That keeps your you know, aging defense off the field. It protects your quarterback. You don't need to have, you know, 19 talented wide receivers in that kind of an offense. I think it's the cheapest route for the Steelers to go, who are, you know, experiencing some cap trouble right now. And it's a very effective way to run a successful team. I think that's the direction that they're going in.
Yeah, and the way this year's draft shakes out, you've got a lot of defensive and offensive line, even front seven players there in that first round. But towards the back, the very tail end of the first round and then second, third, fourth round, you've got guys like, you know, Le'Veon Bell at Michigan State was the name you were looking for. Somebody could take a chance on Marcus Lattimore coming off this knee injury. But there are guys to be had in these second, third, fourth rounds that could fill a need like that for the Steelers.
Yeah, I mean, look, who's the best zone runner in football right now? It's probably Arian Foster. Arian Foster wasn't drafted at all. You know, granted,
yeah,
he's paid now, but, you know, for good reason. He's been, you know, probably the second best overall running back in the last 3 years. You can pick up guys like that because, again, their combine statistics are not going to jump out at you. But if you watch them on film and you know what you're looking for out of that kind of a style of runner, there's a lot of them out there to be found. You know, there are a lot of college teams that run that system, and they get guys that are that talented. And, you know, I can't stress this enough. It's a very cheap way to run a team. You know, Rashard Mendenhall is one of the more talented runners in the game. He really is. He's a physical freak, an incredible athlete. There are, you know, outside of the game issues with Mendenhall, which is a big part of the reason why he's not back. But the guy is a very, very talented running back. And if he didn't get hurt, I think they could run the same type of offense with him but the injury held them back more than anything else. And it was, you know, great to see Redmond and Dwyer do what they did, but those guys, they're limited runners. They're not, you know, in all honesty, Jonathan Dwyer might be the worst technical running back in the league. I mean, he just has awful mechanics. You wonder why he gets hurt all the time. He runs as high as he does. He doesn't have any real instincts. You know, if you put a Rashard Mendenhall when he's healthy behind the line that they have now, they'd be very good, and they don't need to spend a first-round pick to find a runner of that capability.
Yeah, and the league has really moved away. I've talked about this in some previous shows, moved away from that, you know, premier single back that carries the load like Adrian Peterson and Arian Foster. Most teams are running two and three backs, so they can cover up some weaknesses at running back if you've got two or three guys that can do some different things.
Yeah, and Haley has succeeded with that. You know, you had Jamal Charles there, obviously, but that team barely threw the ball at all. They ran a bunch, and you don't see teams without running quarterbacks have the kind of rushing numbers that the Chiefs had, in Haley's, you know, non-controversial years. They were a very successful running team, and the Steelers went out and got Jack Bicknell Jr. He was the offensive line coach in Kansas City when Haley was there. And it's all leading up to, you know, a well-coached, a well-disciplined, I heavily emphasize the word discipline for this team, a disciplined offensive line that can create things together as a group, use their athleticism together, and spring a running back who may or may not have talent. I mean, Jamal Charles was, what, a third-round pick? Not the most talented guy in the world, but he runs in a great system. They know what they're doing in Kansas City, and he's you know, an outstanding player. I'm not taking anything away from him, but the numbers that he put up in Haley's offense is more, you know, the overall result of, you know, a very fundamentally sound group of offensive linemen. And I really think that's what Pittsburgh is going to do. And, you know, to be honest, I'm kind of looking forward to it. I'm tired of seeing, you know, Joe Flacco getting paid what he's getting paid, because it's the market rate for a quarterback. When you're going to be able to run the ball effectively with three different guys, keep your costs down, and be able to sustain success into Roethlisberger's, you know, the twilight of his career. You have, you know, the good Roethlisberger, when you need him to throw the ball, he's going to be able to. But when your foundation is really running the football, controlling the clock and controlling the tempo of the game, it's really tough to beat those teams. It, you know, top to bottom, it's very, very difficult to take on a zone-running team that has talent doing it. You know, the Houston Texans, somebody that you guys had mentioned before, that's a great example of it. You know, they've kept true to their scheme, and, you know, perhaps if they make a play or two here and there in the last few years, they could be Super Bowl champions. You know, they certainly played like it for a good chunk of the year this season.
Yeah, they've been the team to pick coming out of the AFC the last couple of years and just fell short. And I'm sure they'll be, you know, after we get through the offseason and the draft, they'll be right back up there at the top. With the draft coming up now, exactly 1 month from tonight, everyone's got their mock drafts out there and different players going. I personally have the Steelers in the market for a wide receiver there at their pick 19 the Steelers are at 17 in the first round. In that Patterson, Keenan Allen is who I think is going to be in the neighborhood. On your site, I noticed you've compiled the picks there for the Steelers, and there's a lot of defense that's being projected for the Steelers out there. Jarvis Jones, DeMontre Moore, DN, Mingo, another DN. So where are you at as far as the need for the Steelers? We talked a lot about their running game and need for that and to kind of pull things in. Based on what I see here on the site, you've got a lot of people leaning towards defense. Where do you think they're going to head at that point in the draft?
And I'll preface this first by saying, yes, I do understand why I just, you know, ranted on and on about running the football, but I'm behind you. I'm 100% convinced that the best player that's going to be available at 17 is Cordero Patterson out of Tennessee, the wide receiver who's there. And the reason I say that is not so much a need, even though there is a need, considering they've got Antonio Brown is the only receiver on the roster right now who's signed after this season, and two of the other ones are older than I am. So it's hard to think that they're not going to look for a receiver at some point. But, you know, Barkevious Mingo, that's a pipe dream at 17. There's no way he's going to fall that far. Demontre Moore, I don't think there was a guy who could have been less impressive. I mean, didn't he win the Vontaze Burfict Award this year for least impressive and largest free fall out of the top five of any player? From everything I heard of him, his interview sucked. His physical performance wasn't very good. He doesn't seem like a guy that the Steelers are going to waste their time drafting. All right, I don't claim to be an expert, but they're not going to draft the Texas A&M defensive end. That's too much of a project for the 17th pick of a rebuilding team. It doesn't seem to me that, you know, Jarvis Jones is a guy that, for whatever reason, I mean, I literally ran a 4.9 in high school in our 40. I don't understand how he ran a 4.9 for the biggest interview, you know, of his life, especially considering he didn't work out the combine. So where is he mentally? Where is he physically? I don't understand, you know, why he thinks that he doesn't have to do anything other than just flash the tape at people and they're going to pay attention to that. Patterson is a guy who showed up for everything. He's basically Dwayne Bowe's size with, like, Percy Harvin's quickness. You don't see guys his size returning kicks the way he did in the SEC, and he did a very good job of it. He's very big. He's an outside-the-numbers kind of guy, but he can create plays for himself in the short field as well. In fact, by rights, I shouldn't even think that he's going to be available at 17 either. And I think he's a good fit for the Steelers. He's a guy that's, you know, whether he gets on the field this year or not, I think, you know, it might be kind of up in the air, but there'll certainly be the opportunity there unless you expect Plexico Burris to catch 75 passes. I don't see that happening. You've got a tight end on the Steelers who caught 70 balls last year, who has a blown-out knee that he got in December. So I don't know how quickly Heath Miller's going to be back on the field either. So the opportunity would be there for him to get out there and play, and he's a hell of an athlete. So, you know, I think it's a great pick there. You know, not so much a value need, but the opportunity is there for him to play. But he's a great football player. He's only going to get better. He's barely even played. I mean, he didn't play until he was a junior in high school or something like that. So I think that's a very smart pick. And, yeah, you know, defense is what everybody's kind of clamoring for. But, you know, there are 16 teams ahead of them that like defensive players too. And there are a lot of very good defensive players in this draft. So I think Mingo would be a great pick. I think he's going to be a good football player. But he's not going to last that long.
Yeah, there's a lot of teams ahead of them that have defensive needs. And this draft is deep. You know, if they go wide receiver first round, maybe they go defensive end second round or linebacker and then pick up that running back in the third or fourth round. So it is good that this year's draft isn't, you know, really heavy with the skill position and quarterbacks in the first round. You're going to get a lot of guys taken out of the trenches, which is going to build championships. In my mind, you know, I said – in the Super Bowl, you had the best offensive line, in my opinion, all season long in San Francisco, and then the best offensive line that pulled it together heading into the playoffs. And you've got guys like San Francisco's drafting Iapati and these other guards and tackles in the first round, and you look at them like, well, you know, who's this guy? I've never heard of this guy. But that's where you're going to build championships, and there's a lot of offensive and defensive linemen, linebackers that are going to be available throughout this draft. So, you know, if they go wide receiver first round, there's still extremely solid talent available in the second and third round on the defensive
side.
Yeah,
you know, I agree completely. And look at the opposite side of the field against San Francisco. I mean, the Ravens were a great example of that. I agree 1,000% with you as far as Baltimore's offensive line went in the playoffs. They did remarkably well. They played far better in you know, their four playoff games than they had prior to that. More than anything, though, what I really saw out of them was their defensive line. You know, a lot of very unheralded players. And granted, it helps when you get a guy like Haloti Ngata playing, you know, healthy for the first time probably in a year and a half. But guys like Arthur Jones, guys like Pernell McPhee, I mean, they really came to play. And they were able to do a lot of good things up front, at least against the pass rush. it's a young, improving run defense. I think, you know, Baltimore has addressed a few of those things in free agency, but the core of that team is all built through the draft, and it's those, you know, third and fourth round picks that they've been able to hit, and the Steelers have not. It's been the difference between those two teams the last 2 years. You know, truth be told, I think Baltimore took over, you know, supremacy in the division in 2009. I think they've been a better team each year since that. Their biggest issue has been, you know, just untimely mistakes leading up until, you know, the fact they finally won a Super Bowl with the talent that they had. And it's because of the fact they drafted those rounds so well, and the Steelers haven't. And this year, more than any other year under Steelers general manager Kevin Colbert, he has to knock this out of the park. They're in real trouble if they're not, because that 2008 draft is arguably the worst they've had in team history. They don't have any of those guys anymore. 2009 didn't fare very well. They didn't keep any of them. So they really need to hit on, you know, probably 5 out of 7 rounds here. They've got to get guys that can play. If not this year, they have to play by next year. You know, they can't draft Cam Hayward anymore. They need to get guys that can get on the field. Draft players that won't take 3 years of practice to learn how to play. And hopefully they can do that. And for the sake of, you know, the future of this team, it's, you know, it's really going to come down to this draft.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, the rest of the division, well, starting with the Ravens, are catching up. Pittsburgh was head and shoulders above this division for so long, and you had bottom feeders of Cleveland and Cincinnati. But, you know, the Ravens obviously are on top of things now. Cincinnati's been a solid young team coming up with the young quarterback and wide receiver in place. And, you know, Cleveland's messing around. I never bought Brandon Weeden as a quarterback, and I think he's on his way out quickly. But, you know, every once in a while they make the signing of Kruger, and they do some things, and you wonder when they're going to come up. But the days of Pittsburgh being so much better and can just run off 10 wins in that division, I think, are behind them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a lot more competitive than it has been. I agree with you on Weeden. You know, there are some flashes here and there that I saw last year, but, you know, top to bottom, he's a fairly mediocre player. Doesn't look like he's going to be all that much, but they've got a lot of building blocks in place there. I mean, you know, one thing that people don't really talk about, just because, you know, Cleveland has been the butt of so many jokes for so long, is how good that defense is. You know, I don't think they played their best last year, and I think that's why you know, they have a coaching change going in place there now. They've got some great defensive players on that team. I mean, you get Joe Hayden off the Adderall or whatever it is that he was taking, and you can find, you know, more depth at cornerback. Their safeties are really good, and they have a great front seven. You know, that's a nasty defense. When you have a defense that would rather be tough than look good, like Cleveland has, you're able to beat teams that you shouldn't be able to beat, you know. The game against Pittsburgh, which is absolutely ridiculous, one of the most bizarre games you're ever going to see. They got 8 turnovers in that game. Granted, they still only won by 6 points, but they had 8 turnovers, and you could feel it. You know, the Steelers running backs were terrified to touch the ball because they were getting hit, and you know, Cleveland's going for the ball, and they just attacked them. It was impressive to see. Now, you continue to build, you know, the offensive side of the ball there, and you actually put some playmaking offensive players there that the franchise hasn't seen since Webster Slaughter, probably. If you get those guys developing, you've got a pretty good nucleus of a team. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they're competitive this year. You know, if there's been a year in the last, you know, 12 for the Steelers to finish at the bottom of the division, then, you know, this very well could be it. And it's not necessarily because I think the Steelers are going to be terrible. I just think that the division is much closer now than it has been. And I know Steelers fans don't like to hear that, but Cleveland is not a terrible team. I mean, they could very well be, you know, 6-10, 5-11, but I don't think they're going to be all that easy to beat through a 16-game schedule this year.
Yeah, they're going to be one of those teams, I think, that will grab those home division wins. They'll beat, you know, probably Pittsburgh and even Baltimore there at their home games within the division, because when you've got a defense, like you said, that can get after you and create turnovers, you know, maybe the offense only has to put 6 points on the board because the defense is going to put, you know, is 12 up by themselves and hold the other team down. So as a Lions fan, I count on the Browns to be terrible. So it makes me nervous as the Browns get better, that puts Detroit down in the toilet even more. So hopefully they turn things around this year and don't end up being the butt of the jokes for another decade.
I'd say you guys are probably more like Cincinnati, right? I mean, you've got a plus grade in the quarterback category, but you've got a receiver that can beat you on his own. So you never know. You know, when you have those guys.
Yeah. Hopefully this year is a turnaround. Well, I appreciate you coming on tonight, Neil. Why don't you give everybody your Twitter handle and where they can find your work and how they can get in touch with you.
Now, the website is behindthesteelcurtain.com. The Twitter handle for the site itself is BTSteelCurtain. Gotta love that lack of space when you have a really long website name. Mine is Neil Coolong, NEALCOOLONG. You give me a shout out there. Yeah, behindthesteelcurtain.com. We're part of the SB Nation network. Check us out. It's kind of an active community. You know, a lot of comments, a lot of interaction between fans, and we really enjoy it. It's you know, we try not to take ourselves too incredibly serious, but we do like to produce, you know, quality work. It's not just kind of a rehash of headlines and cheesy jokes. We actually do try to put some effort into the writing. So, yeah, if you want good discussions, place to be in Steeler Nation.
Well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your thoughts on the Steelers, and we'll all see how the draft shakes out here in about a month. So I appreciate you coming on the show tonight, Neil.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Okay, great. All right, well, that was Neil Coolong from Behind the Steel Curtain, part of the SB Nation website. We're going to go ahead and take a break now, but after, on the other side, if you want to join the conversation, you can call in at 323-927-2906 and join the conversation.
Our job is to make you better, to make all athletes better. One great innovation at a time. Great athletic innovation isn't available just yet, but it's being built at Under Armour right now. I will.
This is RF with the RF Sports Radio Show. Do you have a business, a product, a service, or a website, and you need more customers? Advertise with the fastest growing internet sports radio show and market your business to sports fans worldwide. Don't miss a unique opportunity to capitalize on the biggest marketing genre in the world. Email me at rfsportsradio@gmail.com. That's rfsportsradio@gmail.com. We have options for every budget, and don't let business pass you by.
Remember this number, 9.8. That's not the time on the shot clock or the seconds left in the game. It's not the number of times I will light you up. Nah, 9.8 isn't any of that. It's ounces. And that makes this the lightest ever.
All right, welcome back to Football Extra Points on RF Sports Radio. I'm your host, Scott King, and we just wrapped up a great conversation with Neil Coolong of Behind the Steel Curtain, part of the SB Nation website. So we talked about the Steelers, their offseason, where they're heading in the draft, you know, kind of Mike Wallace moving on from them, where they're going to go, what their needs are. So right now I've got them targeting a wide receiver at their spot in the draft, number 17. On my latest mock draft, I've got them taking Keenan Allen. I think also Cordell Patterson is going to be available, wide receiver from Tennessee. You've also got, you know, guys like Tavon Austin who are going to be down the board a little bit. So they may end up going that direction and then going towards maybe a running back or defense there in the second round. So, you know, as we keep going through the offseason and getting these holes filled, we go through these pro days. So the draft boards are really taking shape. Once we hit the end of March, you know, we get through March Madness, which everybody's talking about right now, looking at their brackets. That's what we're going to be focused on, and football fans will be looking at. So the next 3-4 weeks is really going to be ratcheting down where teams are going, what the needs are, what their positions are that are left. So, you know, just while I mentioned it, while I've got my mock draft out there, I'll just run through some of the picks and share my thoughts on it. At the number one pick, we'll start at the top. I've got Kansas City going with Eric Fisher. I know a lot of people have Luke Joko going in that slot. I've been impressed with everything I've heard from Eric Fisher and seen from him coming out of Central Michigan. Put him to the top of my board. I think him and Joko are a 1 and 1A as far as offensive tackles go. I've got Joko going number two to Jacksonville, but I think those guys could go either position. So that's not a big surprise that these guys will go there at the top of the draft. I also have at number three, Sharif Floyd. He's the defensive tackle going to the Oakland Raiders. I think, you know, the Raiders, they need help all over the place. As always, never really know what direction they're going. I'll offer up my services to be the general manager anytime they want to hire me. I think I do a pretty solid job. But they've got them going with the D-tackle. Star Lotulelei, the other defensive tackle, going to Philadelphia at number four. For the Lions, I've got him going Deion Jordan, outside linebacker, there at number five. Cleveland at six, D. Milner, cornerback. Arizona and Buffalo. These are two teams that need a quarterback. Arizona's released Cobb. Buffalo's released Fitzpatrick. So I've gone ahead and given Arizona at number seven, Geno Smith. And I put Buffalo taking Matt Barkley. And I know people are really down on Barkley this season. The guy was, you know, would have been a top five draft pick last year, and he comes back and all of a sudden there's all these flaws that are exposed in his game. And I guess, you know, there is some reality there that you're going to find more flaws the more you see somebody. But I just don't see how a guy can go from a top, you know, five quarterback in the league to, or in the draft, to completely off the radar. So he's probably not going to go there. But, you know, when putting these mock drafts together, you look at team needs. And I went ahead and put him to Buffalo, so we'll see what happens. The Jets at number nine, I've got him going Jarvis Jones. And then at 10 for the Titans, I've got him going Bjorn Werner, defensive end out of Florida State. So I'll just touch on a few other kind of high points through the draft here. Ezekiel Ansah, the D end out of BYU, got him going 15 to New Orleans. He's a player that's getting a lot of discussion right now. A lot of people like to compare him to Jason Pierre-Paul, the DN playing for the Giants that came out of USF as a super athletic guy who didn't really play a lot of football growing up, but just has a huge upside. So we'll see where he goes there. A couple other high points. Let's see here. I've got Minnesota picking up Tavon Austin. Figuring they'll take a wide receiver to replace Percy Harvin. And then down towards the end of the draft, got Denver going with Manti Te'o. And that's pretty much the high points there in the draft. So looks like we have Chris Daughtry from the Draft Insider on the line. So we'll go ahead and dive into the conversation with him. How are you doing tonight, Chris?
Oh, I'm doing good. How are you? Thanks for having me on the show.
Great, no problem. Thanks for coming on. So we're obviously diving through the off season and the mock drafts and player breakdown. I just kind of ran through a little bit of my my first round draft. And towards the end of my first round, I've got Denver taking Manti Te'o at linebacker. His pro day is coming up this week, actually tomorrow. And just wanted to get your thoughts on Manti and what he needs to do in his pro day to improve off of his combine performance.
Well, I think that, you know, Manti Te'o really needs to have a solid pro day, not necessarily in his 40. I know that he does need to improve on his 40 to kind of get that concern out of the scouts' minds. But my biggest concern for him is the drills. You know, how are his hips going to look? Because that's one of the biggest things for Manti Te'o is I'm a huge follower of Notre Dame, and I've watched him all 4 years. And one thing I'll tell you that I've said about Manti Te'o is he's pretty much who he is. He is who he's going to be today, 5 years from now. He's pretty much at his ceiling. If not, he's really close to it as far as potential is concerned. You know, the guy that you're drafting next month in the first or second round is the guy that you're going to have on your team in 5 years. He's not a guy that is raw, that has a lot of potential. He's pretty much maxed out his potential at this point. And I think tomorrow at his pro day, which I'll be covering, he really needs to focus on those individual drills. You know, how does he look when he's in a change of direction? Is he agile enough to make that change of direction quickly? Can he turn his hips to the ball quickly? You know, those are things that I'm looking at for Manti Te'o tomorrow in his pro day.
Yeah, and I watched the obviously the national championship and really tried to focus in on Manti Te'o. I don't watch as much Notre Dame football as it sounds like you do. And the one thing that kind of I came away from that game with is you had an Alabama team with arguably three first-round offensive linemen, a true NFL caliber offensive line. And to me, it looked like Manti disappeared in that game. Did you see the same thing, or was that game just kind of an aberration compared to the rest of the season?
I think any team that would have faced Alabama in the national championship would have got steamrolled. Alabama is a different league. They just have such great coaching, such great development down there with Nick Saban and his staff. I think that those players on that roster are just they're great players. You know, Chance Warmack is going to be a top 10, top 15 pick. DJ Fluker is going to be a top 15, top 20 pick. Eddie Lacy might be a first-round pick. Barrett Jones, with his Lisfranc injury, he'll probably slip into the second or third round, but he's worth the first-round pick. He can play center. He can play guard. He can play tackle. Manti Te'o had a solid year. He came second in the voting for the Heisman. He had only two missed tackles the whole year. I think that, you know, as we discovered the hoax and everything that he dealt with, I think that was more of the issue in that national championship game, not to mention the difference in talent level. I think that played a, you know, Notre Dame doesn't play a tough schedule. They play Navy. They play Pittsburgh. They play Utah. They play BYU. They don't play LSU, Georgia, Florida. They don't play these top-tier SEC teams every year, week in and week out, like Alabama does. And a lot of people don't understand that when they look at that national championship game, when they see the score, you know, 42-14. Well, Alabama plays a lot harder teams than Notre Dame. So I think when you look at Manti Te'o, you can't hold that national championship game against him. One, he was dealing with everything he found out about the hoax. And two, Alabama is just flat out a better team. They will be tomorrow. They were that day, and they'll be, you know, they will be a year from now. So.
Yeah, that is true. They are kind of in a class by themselves. Another team that's in the market for a linebacker now is the Bears with the whole Brian Urlacher situation and him moving on. Where do you think the Bears are going to be going there at number 20? And is Manti Te'o somebody that could possibly be on their radar?
Well, I think first, I actually discussed this on my show just we had an hour ago. The one thing I want to say about the Bears situation, because I myself follow the Bears and I know a lot of Bears fans who interact with me on Twitter who are very upset about this whole situation. One thing you have to understand is Phil Emery is seemingly doing business with the Bears the Patriot way. And we all know that the Patriots believe that no one player is more important than the overall goal for the team long term. And Emery showed that with Urlacher when he decided to not give him $3 million and decided to give him a take-it-or-leave-it one-year, $2 million deal, you know, seemingly ending the relationship with them. For the Bears in the first round, I think they're in a position to take the best player available. You know, they need an offensive lineman. If Fluker's not there, Cooper or Warmack, they're not going to take a lineman. They're not going to reach. If Te'o's not a first-round pick, in my opinion. You know, I cover the draft year-round. he's not a first-round pick. He's a top 40, top 50 guy for me. He could be taken in the first round. Like we saw, it only takes one team. You know, Tim Tebow was a first-round pick because one team fell in love with him. Christian Ponder was a first-round pick because one team fell in love with him. So it only takes one team for them to say, okay, well, you know what, we're here at 20. We love Manti Te'o. We feel he's the best player available and the best linebacker. Let's take him. But with that 20th pick, I think they can go a lot of directions. I think they can go slot receiver. If a guy like Tavon Austin's available or Clarrell Patterson happens to slip to them, I think that because Earl Bennett and Devin Hester are not the answer there with the third receiver option, they could go defensive line. They need another defensive tackle to pair with Henry Melton because Henry Melton and Stephen Paya or Henry Melton and Matt Tuina is not a good fit. They could also go defensive end, defensive back. You know, there's a lot of options that they can go at 20. If I'm on the clock and a guy like Kevin Minter from LSU, a middle linebacker, Alec Ogletree is there, I would take one of those two players at 20th overall.
Yeah, Ogletree is actually somebody I've got in my latest mock draft going 19 to the Giants. So he's right there in that range where he could be available along with, you know, Cooper. And I actually, in my latest mock draft, have him taking Tyler Eifert, the tight end, at that slot. But they could go any number of directions there in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly think that with the Bears, in my personal opinion, from what I know about the Bears front office and what I think they're going to do, I think they're going to go best player available at that point, unless one of the top linemen is on the board.
Yeah, and they really upgraded their wide receiver position. I'm actually here in Columbia, so Alshon Jeffery is somebody that I'm very familiar with, and I was extremely excited for the Bears to pick him up because I knew he was going to be a big target there. Paired up with Brandon Marshall, and I think this year, you know, you're going to see, hopefully, you know, the Bears figure out how to use those guys together, and if Cutler can stay upright, you know, he's poised for a huge season this year.
Well, one thing about Alshon Jeffery, he's got to stay healthy. You know, he was injured way too much last year, you know, and when you're a rookie and you're not playing, you're not learning the playbook and you're not gaining chemistry. So that's something that Alshon Jeffery has to make sure that he does to stay healthy for them this year if he wants to be at all involved in that offense moving forward.
Yeah, I was one that last year with Brandon Marshall and Cutler, I actually took Cutler as my first pick in the draft and paired him with Brandon Marshall and expected big things. And unfortunately it didn't pan out mainly, you know, I blame mainly the offensive line. I don't know how you see things there, but they, if they could give that him some time, they could do some damage for sure.
Yeah. I think, well, are you talking about fantasy? Yeah. I mean, Jay Cutler, I write for Fantasy Football when the draft is not in season. Jay Cutler is not a fantasy quarterback. He's not a fantasy guy. He's not a guy you want starting on your fantasy team week in and week out. He's a good bye week option, but he's not a guy I would take high in the draft. As far as, you know, the tandem, the Marshall Cutler tandem, it's not like it was in Denver. You know, it's not the offensive line they had in Denver. It's not the running game they had in Denver. You know, I was a big opposer to the long-term deal they gave Matt Forte. And I just think that, you know, with the lack of durability Forte shows, that puts a lot of pressure on Cutler to get that ball out. And with that offensive line, it makes it even worse.
Yeah, definitely. They need to make some moves at the offensive line. And that division overall, I think I mentioned I'm a Lions fan, so I'm very familiar with that NFC North. You know, you've got the Packers and the Bears kind of separating themselves, the Lions trying to mess around with being somewhere in the middle of the pack or down in two or three wins, and then you've got the Vikings. I can't really tell what they're doing. I'm not a Christian Ponder fan myself, and then you've got Percy Harvin's moved on. So I think the Vikings are going to have a really hard time repeating their success from last year with that roster.
Yeah, one thing about the NFC North and one thing especially about the Lions is they need a running game. You know, they need to take pressure off Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson's not going to have a season this year like he had last year. He may never have a season like that again. And that's not taking away from Calvin Johnson and Matt Stafford. That's just saying that they, you know, they just lost their starting left tackle. you know, they need to solidify that left tackle spot. And, you know, I hope for them that they get a guy like Fisher or Jokel or Lane Johnson is even an option there at five. But they need a running game. You know, Reggie Bush had one good year in Miami. They gave him $16 million because of it. You know, what they're trying to do is they're trying to place Javon Best, who's never going to play again. And that's unfortunate because he had a lot of talent. It's just that he had some serious injury issues that he couldn't overcome. You know, they're trying to replace Javon Best. You know, is Reggie Bush and Mikel LeSure a good 1-2 tandem? We'll have to find out. But, you know, they really need to solidify that running game for that offense to be anyone successful next year.
Yeah, I actually just wrote an article yesterday on the Lions and kind of grading each unit on the offensive side. And they've moved on from Backus, Chehrlis, and Peterman on the line. So they've lost three of their five offensive linemen. And Dominic Raiola, you know, needs to be on his way out. So they've just got way too many holes to fill this season. And I'm really concerned about, I think they're building towards the future, but I think this year is going to be a big step backwards. I'm concerned right now. So we'll see where they go in the draft. But I don't want to bore you with too much Lions talk because it's easy for me to fall back into that, and I could go on all night. So I know you just had your show, and you've got your work is out there. So do you want to give everybody your Twitter and your website and your show so everybody can find you and find your work?
Yeah, absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter at Draft Insider. A lot of our scouting reports, our positional rankings, our mock drafts are all found on www.withthefirstpick.com. And you can listen to all of our shows that we've had in the past and in the future at www.blogtalkradio.com/draftinsider.
All right, great. And you're going to have a special show the night of the draft?
We are going to be broadcasting live from the draft in New York City.
Excellent. All right. Well, great. Well, I appreciate you coming on tonight, Chris.
Hey, anytime, Scott. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Thanks. That was Chris Daughtry from Draft Insider. He's got some great work out there on Twitter and his website, and he's a must follow for those of us that are into the draft. So, touched on Manti Te'o with him a little bit and the Bears. So, you know, interesting stuff. And one thing that I say about these mock drafts is it's a lot of fun to put them together. It's a lot of fun to read them, but they all have one thing in common, and that's that they're all going to be wrong come draft night. So we'll see. The one thing to take away from a mock draft is who's available in your area. So, you know, we talked about the Bears a little bit, what they need. I've got on my mock draft, I've got Jonathan Cooper going 18 to Dallas, Alec Ogletree going 19 to the Giants, Tyler Eifert going 20 to the Bears. You got Tavon Austin, I've got at 23 to the Vikings. And these are all players, you know, Chris was mentioning, could be on their radar for Chicago. So when you're looking at a mock draft, you know, yeah, it's fun to look at your team and zero in on that. But you want to look who's in the area. You know, what's the talent landing around where your team's picking? And then you can get an idea. So, you know, come draft night, will the Bears select Tyler Eifert? I don't know. I've got him in my latest mock draft there. But will they take Keenan Allen, Jonathan Cooper, Alec Ogletree, Tavon Austin, which is within a few pick of the Bears? I would feel pretty confident that they're going to do that. So just my two cents on the draft and how it works. So so as we continue through the offseason, we're going to be talking to people that cover the different teams and bringing guys on. So we've got guests lined up every night. So that's going to be exciting. So for tonight, I'll go ahead and move on to my extra point, and that's veteran players moving on. And I mentioned earlier in the show and just a little while ago with Chris, the Brian Urlacher situation. And for me, it always comes down to, and I've said it before and I'll say it again, it's a business. You know, teams are making business decisions. Players are making business decisions. You know, I hear people say, well, you know, players should be loyal or teams should be loyal. And, you know, the bottom line, most of us in business, you're going to do what's best for you and your family. You're going to take advantage of the opportunity. If somebody offers you more money to do the same job you're doing, you're going to move on. If you feel like you're not being used to your potential and you can make more money somewhere else, you're going to move on. If you can be more successful, maybe it's not about the money. Maybe you want to go to a top company or make a big move and be more successful, you're going to do that. So you've got guys like Ed Reed who moved on to the Texans. It wasn't a money decision. He decided that he thought that was the best situation for him to win another championship. And Brian Urlacher wanted a little bit more money, so he's moved on. So, you know, I don't have a problem with these guys making those decisions. I've made decisions similar to these, and obviously not as many zeros as these guys are getting, but it's all the same. So, you know, I have no issue with these guys making the best decisions for themselves. So that was our show for tonight. Appreciate you tuning in. I'd like to thank Neil from Behind the Steel Curtain for coming in, and Chris from Draft Insider coming on and discussing the offseason. So next week's show, we'll be continuing with the offseason program. We'll have some great guests on, and it'll be April. So the draft's right around the corner. So everybody have a great night, and thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.